Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. You know, normally we'll have an opening here and we'll tease what this program's going to be about today. It's a Monday. Welcome. Glad to have you guys joining us here. I'm going to play this teaser, this real Yellowstone official trailer. All right. Because I think it captures all these statements. I'm not going to play it all, but this is part of our opening here today. Okay. Because we are going to explore all these issues as much as we can. And to all of the, well, look at, we all live on a piece of land, right? That's wildlife. I mean, as we talk about our public lands and our private lands, we struggle at times to understand where the line is. Let me play this. Okay, Cody, why don't you go ahead and do our opening, and then we'll roll right into this trailer. And I think this will set the stage real well, better than I could, what we're talking about here today. From the Shepherds of Wildlife Society, the real Yellowstone, and I guess that's enough. These are the issues that we're going to explore today. And listen to this and see if it doesn't resonate with you.
We've been here in Montana since the mid-1800s.
It's our history, it's our heritage, it's our family.
The good old American spirit is still here, you know, working and, you know, being a part of this land.
The goal of American Prairie is pretty simple. We're trying to build the largest nature reserve in America and completely open everything to the public.
They call it rewilding the land. It's a very easy thing for them to sell because it sounds like they're doing a good thing, unless you're one of the people that they're trying to rewild.
You know, the idea that animals belong to everybody is different than the idea of my property belongs to me.
The reality is in Montana, there's a lot of private land and there's a lot of people who don't provide any access to that private land.
You know, they wanted to buy our land, change our traditions, and disregard our communities.
Everybody knows that we're in the land acquisition business. We're very transparent about that.
You're affecting people's families that have been ranching on those lands for hundreds of years now.
Last year, the elk coming down in our hayfield ate the equivalent of $150,000 worth of hay.
They recover that cost through leasing to an outfitter or charging a trespass fee. And they get yelled at, oh, you're commercializing the public's wildlife. Are they, or are they just recovering some of the costs associated with the public's wildlife?
Production agriculture is what provides the economy for central Montana.
What we're doing here is producing the cleanest food in the entire world.
It's like you can taste the sunshine in the grass.
Without agriculture, the production of food, you cannot have a city, you cannot have any business, you cannot have a bank. It's the basis.
When American Prairie Reserve buys a place, I view it as a death in the community.
The last 150 years, it's been the producers here developing those grasslands.
We've created this ecological resilience from the soil up. It works.
You can raise food totally in sync with nature.
We're seeing animals that have never been on the prairie before return. Those are our indicators of success. We're seeing that ecosystem restored.
I don't know that I have the right to choose what should or shouldn't be here based on what's convenient for me.
You can never take the human out of a conversation about conservation. This is all deeply connected.
A lot of ranches are barely hanging on as it is.
Everybody that's coming into this area is driving the price of land through the roof.
And, you know, then there were a lot of cattle in danger. Finally, you know, the fire was going to overtake us. And so we took off. And
it's one of the best trailers I've seen.
The Real Yellowstone Digital Cinema event premieres July 15th. Visit shepherdsofwildlife.org for more information.
And that is underway here. Let me introduce the director and the founder as well of Shepherds of Wildlife Society. It's Tom Opry. Have a great conversation with Tom earlier this morning, too. And I'm glad to have you here, Tom. We're going to open this up. But nice trailer, sir. I mean, that really captures, I think, the essence of the issues that you're talking about here. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Hey, Tom. I want to say, first of all, thanks. Thanks to you guys, and thanks to the rest of your crew, and thanks to all the wonderful listeners on your show. It's a really special day here, Monday morning. I'm in Lewistown, but it's really special to be here on your show and being able to talk to your audience because, as you said, the issues that we're dealing with here in Montana are so critically important to the future of our state and the future of our families.
Before we get into those issues, though, I want to have you lay out where you're going to be, where you've been, what you're doing, what the real Yellowstone movie is about, but also this tour, so we can get dates and times. And I know you're still working on a lot of those things, too.
Yeah, it's a work in progress here. We had our world premiere this past Friday in Bozeman at the Emerson Theater. We had a sold out crowd there. We moved on to Saturday night. We were in Glasgow again, another sold out show, and then last night we were in Lewistown, and it was the word's getting out, folks. And we had about 60 pre-sales for a theater that holds 200 people. 5:15 showing, 5:05 we pretty well packed the 200 people into the theater, and County Commissioner Ross Butcher says, hey, you need to go outside. And I walked out the doors, and the line extended across the block. There was another 100, 150 people trying to get in. So we opened up a second theater. We were able to get about 300 people in the door. So it was really great. Tonight, I'm going to be in Havre at the theater there. 5 o'clock, you want to be there. Afterwards, if anybody's interested, we're going to have a little afterglow at one of the local restaurants. But I'll be announcing that tonight. And then on Tuesday night, we're going to be in Cut Bank doing the same thing. And then I've got we've gotten just inquiries from all over Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. We're slated to be in Dillon on the 24th of July. The 25th, we'll be in Salmon, Idaho. And then on the 26th, we'll be in Polson. And I know we've got the 8th in Butte at Montana Tech at the Library Theater. And then on the 9th, we're going to be at the Myrna Loy in Helena. And we are adding dates in Billings, Missoula. Whitefish is the 17th of August. But we're adding dates all the time. And so if you go to shepherdsofwildlife.org or follow Shepherds of Wildlife or me, Tom Opry, O-P-R-E, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or X, whatever it is these days, you'll be able to keep track of what's going on because it's fluid.
Why? What will people get? Why did you make this movie, and what do you want them to take away from it? I know that's a pretty broad question as well, and there's a lot of things in there. But go ahead. Why is it so important many people see this show, Tom?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this is really, really complex stuff. And as a filmmaker, you know, I've been in, you know, my dad was an outdoor writer, wrote for Outdoor Life and Field and Stream for 30 years. So I kind of grew up in this journalism outdoor world. I've been in the film business my whole life. I've been really blessed to work on some really cool projects all over the world. And you know, I've been here in Montana most of my adult life, raising my 4 kids here with my wife up in the Flathead. And just, you know, there's no other better place to be in. And, you know, I'm pushing 30 years now here. And you know, it's not here as long as some of the families that I know that are listening to this that have been here in some cases upwards of 150 years. And you know, what I recognize, I'm outdoorsman, I'm a sportsman, I love to hunt and fish, and I really realized about 7 or 8 years ago that we have a huge problem in our country. And that problem is that, you know, ever since the Great Depression, people have been moving away from the land, right? And they've been moving in the cities. We have this very urban society. I mean, let's face it, folks, even here in Montana, the majority of people here live in a town or a city. They do not live out on the landscape, out in these rural areas. And, you know, at the end of the day, we have, you know, the politics of things. You know, we've got people that are dictating policy, that are enacting the laws. And even in our state legislature today, the majority of the people that represent us live in cities because that's where the voters are. That's where the districts get written. And unfortunately, and a lot of these people, and I don't mean this as it's a negative, but they just don't sometimes understand what it takes to live on the land and how important it is to be a good steward of the land. And that doesn't matter if you're doing livestock or it's about wildlife or fisheries. All that stuff is really important to us. As a human being, all these things are important to have healthy ecosystems. And because we have this disconnect, I mean, you know, we all hear about people in Washington, D.C. making policy for us about grizzly bears that have never seen a grizzly bear track. And so because of that disconnect, we realized, and we did some serious focus group research trying to figure out, well, how do we find solutions to this? Well, we know that, you know, there's a large number of people in the broader public that are very urbanized that are okay with modern conservation, you know, as long as it's done for, you know, say, food consumption. You know, this is your hunting and fishing and all that stuff. And so, all right, well, how do we educate these people? Well, we know a lot of people consume information. They get they get educated, I guess, through, you know, social media. Through motion media. They like to watch videos. I mean, how many people are sitting on TikTok these days? It's kind of crazy. But people get their information that they believe in from these sources. And so, you know, being a filmmaker for 30-some years now, I thought, well, what the heck? You know, who's going to remember the last, you know, film I did, or as far as a television commercial or something like that, which is my bread and butter growing up. And but, you know, these films here, I mean, they really help give a voice to rural people. And that's the main thing we want to do here, is we want to reconnect our urban Western society with nature. We want to get that social buy-in, that social acceptance of our modern conservation and stewardship models. And the thing is focus group research shows us that if these people are told these stories, and they're told the stories from the right people, these are honest, these are true, this is real grit. You know, it's not comfortable. A lot of this stuff, there's a lot of tension in my films, and especially The Real Yellowstone, because there are so many issues here in Montana that we all hear about, we know about. We see people discussing them on social media. You know, we see people talking about it at the local, you know, watering hole, you know, over coffee. And, you know, we've got all these issues on here. So our goal really was is twofold. One is educate that urban public about the realities behind land stewardship and conservation. But two, also, my goal with these films is to really create an opportunity for people to sit down and talk. One of the most wonderful things about Montanans is that we love this place, right? We love the country, we love the wildlife, we love our watersheds, we love it all. And one of the nicest things is that, you know, we all get along most of the time. And when there's a situation, we sit down. I mean, there's all kinds of instances where, you know, we sit around. Of course, you know, think about the rural communities. I mean, you know, these ranchers and farmers. I mean, when it's branding time, everybody goes from ranch to ranch to ranch helping each other out. You know, if you're out sorting, same thing. You know, if there's a problem in the wintertime, you know, people are there to help each other. And that was one of the things that I recognized early on 30-plus years ago, you know, when I first came here and lived here. I just, the people are wonderful. And, of course, now we've had a big change since COVID, right? We've had a huge influx of people coming to Montana. So one of the side, I hope one of the side issues here is that a lot of these people that have come to Montana will take the time to watch this film and learn. Because I can tell you, the first thing I learned when I came to Montana was the gate rule. All right, you come to a gate and it's closed, leave it closed when you go through it. You come to the gate and it's open, leave it open. You know, the theme, leave it the way you found it.
Personal responsibility, too. So. I see that, Tom, as people taking personal responsibility for their own decisions. And it's as simple as a gate, right? I love that example. It's kind of the crossroads, as they will say, between wildlife, habitat, and humanity. A lot of things to discuss there. And we're talking about that here today with filmmaker and director Tom Opry. He's also also the creator and co-founder of shepherdsofwildlife.org. And we're talking about the movie The Real Yellowstone. It debuted in Bozeman earlier, I guess, this month. And then there are VIP events. It was held in Glasgow. Lewistown was yesterday. In fact, Tom's still there today. Haver tonight. And why is it so important? We're talking about that here today. 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483 on the text line. We'll go to Nancy here in just a little bit. Tom, thanks again for being here. You know, I've not done a good enough job of talking about your history as well. I mean, conservation, but best-selling author, film director, cinematographer, as you noted, a journalist as well. Killing the Shepherd. I want to kind of get into those two if we can. That's a 2021 film that garnered quite a bit of critical success there. So thanks for taking this on as well. So in this question, it is sort of, why do you take this on? What does getting educated accomplish? Create the opportunities to talk. You know, what happens when people do get together, get the message, and try to really come together instead of maybe fighting in our own little circles about how we feel about our public and our private lands?
Yeah, you know, Tom, 100% on that. It's so critically important that people, you know, our audience is not stupid. They just don't understand it. You know, I hate to even use the word ignorance. I don't mean it in any kind of negative form, but the reality is just people don't understand what they don't understand. They don't know what they know. So you mentioned Killing the Shepherd. So it's, I did this film, and it came out in 2021.
Right.
It's a story about a rural community in Zambia in the continent of Africa, led by a woman chief, which is rare for that part of the world, who wanted to break the bonds of poverty. Now, these are subsistence farmers, and they waged a war against wildlife poaching. And it was an incredible story. Their wildlife resources had been literally obliterated by commercial, very militaristic bushmeat gangs, which is a $2 billion black market industry in the African continent annually, and that's UN data. And these people, I mean, kids were dying when I got there. They were starving to death. And because they didn't have any food in their wildlife resource, which is, you know, again, remember, you go back in history, just like our ancestors, these big families, 8 or 9 mouths to feed, 10 mouths to feed, subsistence farming, crops fail, but they don't have crop insurance. There is no UN or UNICEF, or their governments don't have the resources or wherewithal to help these people, so they utilize the wildlife, just like we did in this continent. And we didn't realize the wildlife's a very finite resource. And, of course, we did a good number on it, right? Mm-hmm. And eventually we realized, and some wiser heads prevailed in the late 1800s, guys like George Bird Grinnell, Theodore Roosevelt, a lot of those folks, you know, tied to the Boone and Crockett Club, they came out and said, hey, wait a minute, we got to take care of this land. We got to set aside things. Gifford Pinchot, the founder of, you know, really the father of our Forest Service, and also the person who coined the phrase, the wise use is the definition of conservation. I mean, to be a conservationist, you must conserve. It's a physical act. It's not a state of mind. It's not an emotion. And so it's really important. And what we saw in that film, when we got it out to the broader audience, was this incredible receptance to this. And what happened is that film ended up winning awards for social justice and indigenous and human rights. And folks, I'll be honest, you know, I'm a journalist. I try to stay there, but I'm a common sense person, and I'm also pretty physically conservative on my money and all that. And so I was like, wow, okay. If you would have asked me 6 months before the film came out if I thought I was a human rights advocate, I probably would have laughed. But I've come to realize that this is all about us. It's all about us as a species. It's all about human beings. It's about the fact that if we don't see a value, we don't take care of things very well. And so with that film, that started this whole series. And so we did a film that came out last year. We spent about 140 days in Scotland over the course of 2 years, documenting the lives of the rural people in the Highlands, the keepers who work for the sporting estate that are there. And so these guys are doing hard work in conservation, managing the land for their native wild birds, their red grouse and their native red deer, kind of similar to our elk. And they're caught up in this, unfortunately, in this terrible war over land use and land ownership between urban people in Scotland and landowners. And so it's a sad story, because at the end of the day, there's a real problem there with these people being ostracized in their own communities. And these people were some of the most important people historically in their communities. You know, they were the movers and shakers. They were connected to the landowners. They could make things happen, fix problems. But today, a lot of them are committing suicide because of the pressures they're receiving.
Well,
we worked real closely with the Gamekeepers Welfare Trust, the United Kingdom, on that. So all that, but these messages all resonate, right? And here, you know, it's the haves versus the have-nots. I mean, I got a ranch, you don't. Oh, that six-point bull is on there. It's a public asset, right? It's in the public trust. Why can't I go hunt that? So, you know, there's a lot of these issues that echo out there. And so that's what really brought us into this series. And I've been working on this film for about 2.5 years. And literally the first day on it, I was on the Rocky Mountain front on Trina Joe Bradley's ranch, just on the very southern boundary of the Blackfeet Reservation, there on the front. And they had lost several calves on her dad's ranch that day or the day before to a sow grizzly bear with two young cubs that had come in there. And she was teaching them how to kill. And they put out, you know, Wildlife Services were there with a culvert trap. They had FWP's biologists with a culvert trap. So they had two traps out there. And they were using what was left of the calves as bait in the culvert traps, but then they parked them right next to this dead bull cow. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what happened to the bull? And they were like, well, we don't know. It was fine 2 weeks ago, but obviously it's dead now. I was just like, well, wait a minute. This is a story. I mean, what's going on here? So we started that and started following these people. And again, a lot of people say, well, how did you come up with all these people in the film and all that? And I'm like, well, you know, at the end of the day, it's investigative journalism. You kind of go down these paths. because I have lived here for so long, a lot of these people I either knew of or personally were friends with. And a lot of folks introduced me to other folks, and I have to tell you, there's incredible stories going on in Montana. I could make a television series and have a different episode every week.
Yeah.
With another incredible story Montana ranchers and farmers and sportsmen doing incredible, incredible work on their land.
You might get one here. Let's see what Nancy has for us here. Nancy in Roundup, thanks for listening on KGHL, and you're on the air on Voices of Montana with Tom Opry.
And thank you, Tom, and thank you, Tom Opry, for making this film. I want to just say that 28 years ago, I was introduced to a rancher in the Missouri Breaks, and I'm not going to give you his name. He'll remain anonymous. And he was telling us about the greening of America, and especially of Montana, that foreign investors wanted to make Montana an international park. And everything he told us back then, including the tape that he gave us to listen to, has come true. It's happening right now. And I want to say, I want to ask you about these foreign investors like Wyss. He's a Swiss billionaire that's pushing the Prairie Reserve here in our state. And also, you're mentioning the wildlife. Let's take Phillips County, Montana, as an example. The ranchers there, they're saying that the Prairie Reserve has taken down fences. They're putting fences up where there's never been any before. In other words, they have interfered in the migration routes of our elk and our deer. And I'm going to cut it short today because I know you have more to say, and I want to thank you so much for taking my phone call, and I'll listen off air to your response.
Nancy, thank you for that. Tom, I'm gonna I think it's fair. Foreign investors, right? You kind of noted that when, and we don't necessarily, it's not about American Prairie, but it is about community, right?
100%.
Yeah, yep. And so that kind of doesn't strike us very well, right? And also, talk about policies, right? There's a lot of, it seems to be a lot of international interest, a lot of international policy at play. You talk about what hampers production agriculture. You go overseas, and there's a ton of policies that are, in my mind, a lot of people's minds, actually. That's why we have to have a conversation, that are designed to harm production agriculture for another darker purpose. Those things are underneath all of this, aren't they?
Yeah, and there's a lot to unpack with the question from Nancy, and I really appreciate that question, Nancy, because I could make a movie about every little subject that you just mentioned, an entire feature film. What we're really trying to do is kind of give the 10,000-foot overview of what it's like to be a multi-generational rancher or, people that are working the land being good stewards in this film. The international side of things, let's face it, not only do we have those pressures out there, but, because of the allure of Montana from the television show Yellowstone, obviously, that has garnered all kinds of interest. I mentioned earlier about this migration of people we've seen since COVID. People come to Montana because, during COVID, we actually were fairly sane during the whole thing. I know a lot of people that I've met said, well, we moved here from California because of the COVID craziness. So there's a lot of reasons why we've got so many changes happening on when it comes to land ownership. And I have to be quite frank, I see that as the biggest threat to this way of life, this continuation of multi, when you get a family that does a good job of stewarding their land, being good conservationists, when you lose that family, in a lot of cases, you lose that institutional knowledge. And what's going to happen after that? Because remember, all this land has been managed by somebody since the beginning of time.
Right.
I mean, our Native Americans burned it. There was intensive grazing pressure from bison. No matter how many were here, but it's all evolved that way.
I've never seen even an edition of Yellowstone, right? That Kevin Costner series. But I have seen plenty of the real Yellowstone, being a lifelong Montanan, and understand that, and I talk about it here as well, as we have Tom Opry on the program here today. He is a director, filmmaker. He is the producer of The Real Yellowstone and filmmaker for it as well, and also co-founder of shepherdsofwildlife.org for more information. But I have seen, in my mind, what we possibly give up if we don't protect our land and production agriculture is community, our rural nature. And I think there are a lot of things packed into our community that bring us the kind of values that that we want to go forward with. So how do we, if our land is threatened, production agriculture possibly threatened with the way things are moving in the world, how do we regain that? How do we still preserve our community, our rural nature, our rural values with dignity and purpose? And Tom, you know, I kind of want to go there because and you have to talk more about this film, you know, who's in it and things like that. You know, as I look at this, the backdrop is that these things are threatened. And even today's trophy ranches are another example of how things are changing in our frontiers, so to speak. And the things that we want to preserve, we're going to have to work real hard to preserve them.
Yeah, no, you know, definitely, you know, we're at a crossroads right now here in Montana, and let me just stop for 1 second. Let me explain to people, you know, as a filmmaker, as an investigative journalist, you know, in order to make something that's going to educate and inspire people, make a great film, you have to be balanced. You have to be even. You'll find that my films will have opposing viewpoints. If you don't allow everyone an opportunity to say their two cents, to be able to get across why they do or what they're thinking, mm-hmm. you're just creating propaganda. And like we said, my goal here is to get this out to the greatest audience we can. We need to educate that urban public. We need to educate these new Montanans that are here. We need to educate the people in Washington, D.C., and abroad, all these international governments and whatnot. They need to understand what the reality is, because, you know, food production, wildlife habitat conservation, it's imperative to the future, not only of our families and our lives and making a living and be able to survive out here, but it's also imperative that we leave our planet better than we found it. I mean, it might sound a little out there, but at the end of the day, good conservation, good stewardship leads to really important things like healthy ecosystems, like, you know, vibrant wildlife populations, you know, healthy forests and clean drinking water, right? We all need drinking water. And this is what we do as stewards of the land. We ensure that for the masses of people who live in these cities, because without us, without these people on the land, you don't have those. So, you know, you're talking about this, the change of land ownership here in Montana, this concept of trophy ranches. I mean, literally, folks, I heard that the Embar Ranch over in Grass Range, you know, that the Wilkes brothers, it sold for almost $1 billion the other day. Wow. To another multi-billionaire who owns a big ranch in the area. You know, we saw Murdoch buy the Matador for $250 million. Every one of you ranchers and farmers out there, you get your pencil out, get a piece of paper, and tell me at $1 billion on 300,000 acres. How does that pencil out as a cow calf operation?
Right.
How does that pencil out as a dryland wheat operation? It doesn't. It never will. And that's the issue we're dealing with here, because we're seeing a cataclysmic change in land ownership in Montana. A lot of people wanting to have, you know, we saw this a long time ago on the Bitterroot. A lot of people coming from California wanting to have the little, so now the Bitterroot's full of these little 20 acre, you know, they call them ranches or ranchettes. You know, look at the traffic between the Bitterroot. I mean, it's been this way for, what, 30, 40 years, going up to every morning and every evening going up to Missoula. I mean, it's just like living in L.A., but that's what we are dealing with here. And you know, what's the end result? I mean, you know, we're not going to stop this. I mean, honestly, it's Rob Arnault, who's in the film. He's a longtime outfitter, used to work for Turner, running the Flying D and other hunting operations of the Turners. And he brought it up in the film. He said, hey, you know, remember what the Native Americans were looking at in the 1860s, 1870s, 1880s, when they saw all these people showing up, putting fences up and bringing cattle with them. They saw it. I'm pretty sure they weren't real comfortable with it. And that analogy is probably not far off from what we're looking at. But then, you know, also we're talking about production agriculture here. You know, at the end of the day, you know, if we take all this land out of production, is that become maybe, you know, we're one of a few countries in the world that's self-sufficient in food production. And we start taking out millions and millions of acres out of, you know, families that are working hard to make a living. You know, I call it the $100 syndrome. You know, $100 means a lot to me, and I'll guarantee you everybody on the radio here. But to some of these people, you know, like Murdoch's and some of these other really, really uber rich people, I mean, you know, Elon Musk, I mean, $100, I mean, let's face it, folks, he could use that in a different place than you know, where we go to get the white stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so at the end of the day, it's just that perception around there. And that's why these films are so critically important, because, again, we live in representative democracies. You know, 50% plus one wins in a day. Right now, less than 4% of the U.S. population buys a hunting license in any given year. And that's U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service data. There's less than 5% of the population of America that are farm and ranch. So we are very, very little minorities, and we literally have to get sort of social acceptance or cultural acceptance of what it is to be on the land, to be a good steward, to be a conservationist, that wise use of a natural resource. And these people don't have any, these urban people have no clue. I mean, I saw a study right before COVID where 50% of the kids in the public school system of Chicago didn't know that their beef came. Now, 50% of the kids did not know that their beef came from a cow.
Wow.
Okay, folks, they're going to vote someday. And this is the same problem we're seeing all over the urbanized world. And so that's why these films are so critically important. And, you know, Tom, you asked about the people in the film. There's some incredible stories. Like I said, we could do 10 of these films and still keep going. Like I said, we could do a television series. But, you know, we had some, we talked about Trina Jo Bradley there on the Rocky Mountain front. She's a real outspoken person about, you know, hey, we need to manage grizzly bears, this Endangered Species Act. You know, again, and remember, folks, I'm the messenger here. I'm not giving my opinion right here. I'm giving people a voice. Where they didn't have one, right? And
but Trina has the receipts, though, too. You know, I mean, yeah, she's definitely, here's why we need to manage our grizzly population.
Exactly, exactly. And then on the flip side, we've got Andrew Anderson and his wife Hillary. Hillary is a wolf biologist, and they are running an allotment in the Gravelies. It's one of the highest concentrations in grizzly bears in the lower 48. And prior to them taking over that 50,000 acre grazing allotment, it was one of the worst cases of human wildlife conflict, because the previous ranchers were running cattle up there early in the year, and they've got larkspur. And I'm sure everybody understands larkspur is highly poisonous to cattle when it's flowering. And so they had a bunch of cattle up there in previous years, not the Andersons, but the previous run folks up there that were dying. And of course, when, you know, a grizzly bear can smell carrion meat, you know, dead meat 5 miles away, they get an incredible sense of smell. And so you had this congregation of bears come in there feeding off. And of course, the more bears you get there, the more problems you're going to have. So, you know, at the end of the day, they instituted some regenerative ranching type concepts. They're rotating cattle. They're only running 2-year-olds, which is easier to move around than cow-calf pairs. And they're doing range riding, and they've got 1,100 head up on that allotment in the summer, and they're not starting until mid-August. So once the larkspur issue is over with, but you know, they're trying to find solutions, and they want to live with the wildlife. So, you know, it's a good story.
Yeah.
Up on the High Line, Eric Albus, ranch and family has been there for, you know, close to 100 years now, farming, ranching, and outfitting. And Eric was so worried about the future, he decided to run for office last year.
Yep.
Won a 3-way primary last spring, and then won the election last fall. And then he went to Helena the first of the year and represented the High Line. And he did a good job. They put him on appropriations, and he said, my job is to kill all these terrible bad bills. Because I can tell you, in Helena, I mean, you know, I've been involved in politics on the edges of it and playing around, but, you know, the most important thing for our state legislature is House Bill 2, the budget. And why do we have thousands of budget or bill drafts? It doesn't make any sense to me, especially, you know, I got 90 days to get the job done. So we won't get into that. That's for another show, but maybe I'll talk to Aaron Flynn about it one of these days. But yeah, he decided to throw his name in the hat, and he had to roll up his sleeves. And, you know, we got some great conservation-minded people. Andrew McKeon, the outdoor writer up in Glasgow, he has incredible things that he talks about community. Same thing with just kind of the cost of wildlife on private land just blow my mind, Randy Newberg. You know, so many people I've talked to this week, so just apologize for not having this right there. But, you know, there's really good people. I mean, you know, we talked with the American Prairie people. Their chairman, Bill Hilf, is, you know, an innovative guy. He's got some interesting ideas. He's a hunter himself, a sportsman. And then the Save the Cowboy people. Again, you know, there's that threat. You know, I hear these stories about, you know, 24, 25 years ago, you know, these black Suburbans pulling up into people's driveways in a cloud of dust with people wearing 3-piece suits telling them that they're here to save the prairie. And kind of going back to the previous caller's questions, you know, there's people that have ideas, but again, they don't really have any concept on what's really going on the land. They have this dream, you know, and frankly, it's kind of the rewilding thing that I dealt with in Scotland. And a lot of these dreams don't really reflect well on, say, science. And I'm not saying that the situation in Montana is that way, but, you know, a lot of these ideas are rainbows, right? You know, everybody thinks it's a, you know, there's going to be gold at the end of the rainbow every day, and they've got this plan. But, you know, when people have money, you know, you start to see things change, and they can affect real change, as we're seeing with these this trophy ranch concept, you know, and our realtors, I mean, they're making a lot of money selling these things, and I don't, you know, hey, people are willingly selling, they're taking the money, and and that's really the biggest issue I see, Tom. At the end of the day, ranching and farming is a tough go. I mean, it's a hard job, but I tell you what, the people are passionate about it, they love it, they love that connectivity. I mean, who doesn't want to have that dirt underneath your fingernails, doesn't want to have your hand in the soil, your feet anchored down? It makes us human. I like to say there's a reason why a campfire mesmerizes every human being in the world, and it has nothing, I mean absolutely nothing, to do with roasting marshmallows.
I think I'm gonna pause it right there, because I think you're getting into, I got time for two questions on the other side of the break there, and one would be, what's the call to action from your mind for this film, but also, you know, what was your takeaway as a seasoned film producer and the one who puts all these pieces together to tell the story? What surprised Tom Opry, the director of this film as well? Got to get you tuned in here. Get tickets to Real Yellowstone premiere. Just search it online. The Land is Like a Lady. That is actually an anthem honoring the people who live and die in the land. And also the Real Yellowstone Media for photos and videos. Tom Opry is the director, and it's shepherdsofwildlife.org for more information for the Real Yellowstone. Premiered this week in Bozeman, or last week, I should say. It's in Havre tonight. We'll get to all that. Tom, as time runs out on me real quickly, a couple of questions. What was your takeaway as the director of this film? And then what's the call to action that you want people to have here?
Yeah, awesome. Basically, you just brought up that the land is like a lady. So real quick, folks, do you want to really get a sense of what we're doing here? You can go to iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, anywhere where there is music. You can even tag it to your Facebook and Instagram. Type in The Land is Like a Lady. It's a song that rancher Matt, trying to get my main brain here. We were in Nashville. We produced in Nashville. Rancher friend of mine, Brad Radke out of Drummond, and I, who's got a little more experience writing music than me, we got together last winter. We wrote this thing. It's an awesome song. I think it could become the theme song for the modern American rancher, but you can find it on all those deals. And so, answering your questions, how in the world, what came of this for me? Of course, I work on this for years sometimes, and I get really close to the subject. I get too close, so I hire an incredible editor, actually on the East Coast, somebody I've known since I was 22 years old. And he comes in, and I give him an outline. He takes the footage and starts to massage things. It took about 11 or 12 cuts to get to the final film. But, you know, it's that connectivity, you know. It's just, you know, just it's so real. It's so rich. It's raw. I mean, you know, it's incredible, the stories that we get here. And sometimes, for me, it's all those people walking out of the theater last night in Lewistown just shaking my hand and saying thank you.
Yeah.
It was in Scotland, running across all these gamekeepers coming up to me and saying thank you for giving us a voice. And that's really the most important part. But, you know, really, how can people get involved? You know, get on our social media accounts. So Shepherds of Wildlife, Tom Opry, O-P-R-E. Like us, share us, call your friends up. We're going to have a digital cinema event starting August 15th where anybody can watch the film digitally online. And then, of course, the film tours. You know, call up your local media people, ask them what's going on, if they've written them anything about the film, and we'd love all the support we can get.
Tom, and it sounds like you've got more coming film-wise, so this you're dedicating yourself to this.
Yeah, you know, who's going to remember the last TV commercial I made for a Fortune 500 company? And so, you know, in my life, I'm kind of at the end of my film career. It's a young man's industry, and so now that I'm getting a little bit long in the tooth, you know, now I'm in my 50s, and you know, I'm gonna spend the rest of my life trying to educate the broader public about these important issues and giving a voice to real people. So, because at the end of the day, I want to leave this planet better than I found.
All right, you guys want to join that? Search it up, okay? The Real Yellowstone. You've got Havre tonight at 5 o'clock. It's coming to Cut Bank. Find out where it's going to be and how you can get engaged. Tom, I look forward to chatting with you down the road. It sounds like you and I will be doing a little more of that as we get along here, eh?
Yep, thank you, sir, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yeah, good stuff. Tom Opry, once again. You guys have a great day, and thanks for making us a part of it here as well. It's From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.